Okay, well, good morning and welcome to another edition of the weekly Emunah teleconference. It's Henry Harris. It is May 23rd, and we are going to be discussing today a bit of an insight about the Jewish understanding of the Yetzer Hara and how to interact with the Yetzer Hara and how not to. That's going to be today's topic. And to begin with, we're going to do a bit of a review to remind ourselves of what this call is about. This call is about an understanding of the psychological ramifications of Emunah. That means to say that belief in a single power, belief in a creator that is the sole source behind everything, has implications to our understanding of our psychological experience. Not only is the creator of the universe running, energizing and sustaining all of the events and circumstances of our lives, it's even our emotional landscape, even our experience of life, which is gained through the gift of thought, it's gained through the gift of divine thought, which I speak of as divine energy. I speak of that as divine energy, that the capacity to have an experience of life is not dependent on the circumstances of our life, because the circumstances don't have power to actually determine and shape our experience. Rather, our experience, our felt experience of life, is shaped by a flow of divine energy, the same way everything is shaped by the flow of divine energy. So too is our psychological experience. And how does that work? It means to say that it's not the actual experience of a disagreement or a financial shortfall or an obstacle in our path or a difficult memory. It's not the actual circumstances themselves that is determining our feeling state. It's the experience of divine energy, the experience of divine thought that shows up in our consciousness moment to moment to moment, that's shaping, that's sustaining, that's energizing our consciousness. That's what actually we're having moods. Human beings are having moods because we're experiencing a flow of divine energy, and that flow varies in its feeling, in its nature. It flows. The traditional Jewish understanding of this is that we experience a flow of what we call Yetzer HaTov, the power to formulate good understanding, let's say, and the power, and then alternatively the Yetzer Hara, the power to formulate a destructive understanding. These are two flows that are really a spectrum, but that our Torah and our sages describe as basically something that the Almighty is mechadesh b'chol yom. He renews the flow of that energy, the presence of that energy, moment to moment, in the same way that he's renewing everything. There is nothing of this world that has existence independent of that sustaining and energizing flow from the Creator through his independent will. And so I find myself having a variety of moods. I find myself having, in the face of what could otherwise be similar or identical circumstances, I'm having different experiences. And to the degree that I see that, I see the simplicity. You know, what we're describing here is the distinction between a complicated life or a more simple life. Complicated means that there's tons of variables that go into understanding why I'm having the experience I'm having. My childhood and my siblings and my parents and my biological, chemical nature, the food I ate, I don't know. And I'm not saying that those are completely irrelevant. But the underlying simple understanding is that, well, there is a simple single source behind everything, including the energy that shows up and illuminates my mind. And that's why, in the context of a conversation that I had with a business person who had decades of success with millions of dollars worth of sales, and has over the last 2 years entered into a rut and has experienced quite a bit of self-doubt and discouragement. What I encounter in hearing this person describe, well, what's his problem? So what he'll tell me is, well, my competition has really evolved and I haven't. I have had legal troubles that have really set me back. I've got a website that is no longer operable. And all these reasons why he is unable to perform and experience motivation in the way that he did for decades. And yet, when I poke a little bit closer, what this person indicates is that it's not always true that those phenomena, though the nature of his competition, the nature of his website, the nature of his legal issues, it's not always true that they look and feel crushing. There are times where they look and feel crushing, but then there are times where they don't look and feel crushing. Now, that's not necessarily noticeable to him so much in the moment. I wasn't successful in helping this person achieve this profound shift, and oh my goodness, I'm having an experience from the inside out. It didn't, even as he was able to acknowledge the non-static nature of his experience, it didn't catch his attention in a meaningful way, and that's fine. You know, I don't have the power to arouse insight. None of us have the power to arouse insight in ourselves or in others by looking to this truth. However, because that truth is made known to us through the same means by which everything is created, and that is, it's a gift. But the good news is that it's a mitzvah to learn about the truth. It is an absolute mitzvah to learn about the truth, even if it doesn't produce an emotional shift, because this is the mitzvah of emunah. And secondly, it is certainly normal that a person who's looking in this direction, it's inevitable that he'll come to an appreciation of its truth from an insight, from the place of insight. It's only normal that he will encounter the truth of it, the simplicity of it. So what we're looking to do in this call is to guide ourselves off of a complicated premise about the way the world works and the way our experience of life works toward an exceptionally simple understanding of how our experience is working. The value of that on a truth level, the value of it as being a mitzvah of emunah, and simultaneously the likelihood of it creating a shift in our lives because our nature is simple. The greatest resource that we possess in navigating our lives is the simple wisdom that's not personal to our personal intelligence. It's not personal to our skill set or our life experience per se. It's a gift that resides in us, and it's consistent with the simplicity of the world that has a simple unitary creator. Okay, so that's what this call is about. Now, I wanted to speak specifically about a fascinating Gemara that I encountered just recently that I think illuminates a little bit more of the inside-out understanding as to how are we meant to navigate our inner world, how are we meant to relate to our difficulties, our personal kind of insecurities and sense in our experience of struggle, which I'm going to associate with the Yetzer Hara. Literally, the words Yetzer Hara, the word Yetzer is the word Yotzer, which means to formulate, to fashion, and Hara is simply translated as bad, but it's also the case that it's destructive. Ra is associated with something destructive. So there's something in us, there's an ongoing spiritual force that the Almighty renews within us that formulates destructiveness. That's what it is. There's a destructive like quality to the formulating, to the energy that is being formulated in us that we associate with the Yetzer Hara. It leads us to see ourselves and the world in a manner that's disconnected from the Creator. It leads us to see ourselves in the world as complicated and defined by form as opposed to defined by the single Creator. It leads us to overlook our wholesomeness, our health, and our independence of circumstance, and it leads us to view others as threats, as being truly independent and potentially oppositional to us in a profound way. Those are all kind of hallmarks of the insecure energy associated with this entity called the Yetzer Hara. Now, the Gemara describes that that in the process of shaking the lulav, one has in mind that he's accomplishing something great on behalf of the Jewish people, that he is he has the power to by acknowledging the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to ward off tragedies to the Jewish people, to ward off destructive winds, to ward off destructive rains. And one of the sages who used to take the lulav bundle, the Gemara says that he used to, it says about Rav Acha bar Yaakov, Rav Acha, the son of Yaakov, he used to shake the lulav, and in the process he would say, Din gira be'ene desitna. This should be an arrow in the eye of the Satan. And the Satan is synonymous with this force that leads us astray, that it leads us to see the world in a manner that's disconnected. So he used to say, this, I hereby proclaim this to be an arrow in the eye of the Yetzer Hara. And the Gemara says, v'lo milsehi, but it's not a good idea. It's not a recommended thing. Why? Mishum de'asi, because it will come to incite the Yetzer Hara. Don't declare your intent to vanquish the Yetzer Hara, because it arouses the Yetzer Hara. Now, why should that be? Like, why is that? What does that mean exactly? So I'll share with you another passage from the Talmud that I've talked about in the past, which to me illuminates such an important understanding of the idea of our innate health and our understanding of our inside-out experience. The Gemara, that was a Gemara in Sukkah that I just quoted, and now I'm sharing with you a Gemara in Kedushin that says, Yitzro shel Adam misgaber alav umivakish la'amiso b'choyom. A person's Yetzer Hara attempts to overcome him and destroy him each and every day. V'ilmoli HaKadosh Baruch Hu Oizro. And if it weren't that the Almighty assisted him, eino yacholo, the person could not overcome the Yetzer. So listen to that again. If person every day a person's Yetzer, a person's spirit of insanity, a person's spirit of destructiveness, attempts to overcome and destroy a person each day, to destroy him by helping him to see the world through the lens of illusion, the lens of disconnection, the lens of complication and opposition, etc. Every day the person's spirit of insanity attempts to destroy him. And were it not that the Almighty assisted him, the guy couldn't do it. A person could not navigate his life. He would become, God forbid, wholly owned by the Yetzer Hara. He would become a murderer. He'd become an idolater. He'd become all kinds of things. So what does that mean? It's a fascinating idea that the Talmud is basically saying that the single greatest ingredient in our ability to navigate that internal confusion, that internal spirit of insanity, is itself a force that is not our making. It's a wisdom that's not ours per se. It's the Almighty providing us that kind of platform of wisdom. Now, we have a choice. We have certainly an involvement in it. But to me, there's something very, very beautiful in this. There's something very, very powerful and beautiful. That is, that the way in which we overcome the Yetzer Hara is the way that God designed the world, is that the way we navigate and manage in the face of the Yetzer is through a force that can be easily overlooked. It's through a wisdom understanding that is showing up inside of us that to a large extent is not even noticeable to us. Would we really, like, would I say that when I encounter a test, when I encounter a difficult choice, let's say, I don't know, a conflict or I feel a surge of temper, or I feel a surge of kind of, I don't know, some kind of an appetite for something that's not so healthy or whatever it is, to the extent that I navigate it and I sidestep it and I kind of settle down and don't indulge in, let's say, an angry retort or whatever it might be, the Talmud is saying that there was wisdom, there was divine assistance there that allowed, that was the secret ingredient. There was wisdom that was coming from a source beyond me. That was the greatest aspect of what allowed me to navigate it. Now that's by design. It's by design that there's a quality of, there's something of an under-the-radar-like quality to that assistance. The greatest resource and assistance we have in navigating our own internal confusion is something that is easily under the radar. There's a humility associated with being able to sense and appreciate the presence of that help. And so, of course, it's the case that it doesn't make sense. The Gemara, it says, as I quoted at the very outset, of course it makes sense that a person should not stand up and say, I'm hereby about to vanquish the Yetzer Hara by doing this mitzvah. Well, wait a second. Hello, my friend. That's not the way God intended. That's not the way that God designed this world, that you navigate and overcome your self-destruct instinct. He did not intend that you kind of declare your power to overcome the Yetzer Hara. That's not what he had in mind. There is something involved in the design that the Almighty had in mind for us to truly succeed is through the realization of a resource, of a blessing, of a wisdom benefit that is not our capacity. It's not ours to declare, I've got the power to overcome the Yetzer Hara, here we go. That's not how it works. It is absolutely the case that our job is to look for and see the presence of a wisdom in our lives that is this precisely not our declaration, our power, our personal intelligence. It's true there's a free will. I'm not suggesting there is no free will. But to the degree that we can sense and perceive, oh, look at that, my child did something that was really, you know, has been quite troubling and difficult for me, and somehow I stood in my place, I let it wash over me, and I made a comment that was dignified to myself and preserved my dignity, preserved his dignity. And then at a later time, I looked for an opportunity to address the topic. Wow, that's really amazing. Like I've seen myself fall down and into an utter reaction in prior moments. And here I somehow held my bearings. There's something on my side there. There's something on my side that is present in my navigational device, my navigational ability, that if I'm honest, I cannot claim that I authored it. I cannot claim that I predicted it and then delivered on my prediction. I navigated a challenge, and I look and I can see that there was the presence of a helpful wisdom that somehow allowed me, wow, that's awesome. I want to acknowledge that gift. I want to acknowledge the presence. As I've quoted in the past, the Talmud says everything is in the hands of heaven except the capacity to acknowledge heaven. Hakol b'yidei shamayim, chutz m'yirei shamayim. Everything is in the hands of God except my choice to acknowledge it. So look at that. I had this interaction with a child in which I've had plenty of opportunity to feel reactive, and I was calm, or I was more calm, whatever it might be. You know, I experienced some equilibrium. I can acknowledge that there is divine assistance that was present in my holding my reaction. But that's my choice. That's my choice. The power of my choice is first and foremost to acknowledge the truth that everything is in the hands of heaven, that everything is it's unbelievable. So of course the Gemara says, don't go about declaring that you're going to vanquish the Yetzer Hara, because that's not where and how the Yetzer Hara is overcome. The central resource that you have that is allowing you to overcome your Yetzer Hara is not your personal strength. Your personal strength is in your humility and your capacity to acknowledge the presence of divine assistance in that process. I hope that makes sense. There's a lot more to say about this, but suffice it to say, this is where the Torah is pointing us toward. This is where the Torah is pointing us toward a space, there's a divine space that we are, we possess, this is how it looks to me. We possess an inner world. The inner world is no less being shaped and created by the Creator than the world out there. And there's a beautiful inner world there that I can look at and see and sense and watch, even as I acknowledge that I have a choice, just as much as I have a choice to acknowledge that the traffic comes from the Almighty, I can acknowledge that my moods come from divine energy, from the Almighty. And that simplifies my life. That allows me to stand in a space of truth and simplicity, and we just seem to work better with simplicity. It's valuable for its own sake. It's a mitzvah. And guess what? Human beings are so well suited to operate and navigate their lives when they're grounded in simplicity. Okay, so like I said, there's much more to say about this, but I'd like to pause and just kind of check in and see if anybody's got comments or questions or things that they're seeing. So I'm going to unmute everyone. If I hear noise, then I'll mute you back, and let's take it away.
Rabbi Harris?
Yes.
Hi. I wanted to ask, right, because there's a lot of times when, you know, if we say, oh, if someone's working on a goal or they need some sort of willpower to do something, then I'm just using myself as an example. If I said, like, if I wasn't able to accomplish it, then it'd say, well, I just need to work harder, like, versus saying, then Hashem doesn't want me to accomplish this goal. Because the argument that people will make that, like, no, don't blame Hashem. You have to work on it hard. Like, you have to do your own hishtablus, I guess.
Yes.
To do it. And it's kind of like that, you know, when we look throughout, you know, history or the people that are accomplishing these amazing feats, whatever it is, then a lot of it's like, well, it's just their own, like, you know, determination to keep going or whatever it is versus, oh, okay, if Hashem wants me to, like, when we look at how they accomplish it, a lot of times it's through, like, this insane amount of determination to accomplish the goal or whatever it is. So it's like this, and also in Judaism, you know, we always see, you know, you have to work on ourselves and things like that, then a lot of it's, you know, our own determination to keep going, you know, not letting the Sahara, like, don't blame Hashem, you know, you
yes.
have to be better,
yes.
whatever it is.
Yes. So are you asking whether or not this explanation that I'm sharing seems to kind of de-emphasize the power of our own determination, that it kind of seems to suggest,
yeah.
Look, it's either, I hear that. Well, here's the question I would put back at you is, where does the power of determination and resilience come from?
Right. Right.
Now, I'm not saying that there isn't, I'm definitely suggesting that
yeah.
there isn't a personal role, but I also would suggest, at least as far as I can tell, that I don't know how to simply generate determination and kind of resilience. Like, I've experienced extraordinary determination and willfulness where just things felt insignificant in my path, you know, toward a goal. And I've experienced lack of, you know, momentum, lack of resolve,
right.
and frustration with lack of resolve.
Right. I know, it's like it's hard, right? Because sometimes there's, yeah.
So when you have appreciation for the fact that determination is itself there's a divine assistance in that outlook, right? It's a state of mind. Determination is 100% associated with a state of mind. You know, like, it just is. I mean, that's the way it looks to me. When as I gain appreciation for the fact that my determination is a gift. And I have appreciation for the fact that my discouragement is a, you know, it's my determination is not personal in the sense that it's my power fully. And my discouragement is not personal in the sense that it's not a function, it's not owed to my weakness or being a flawed guy. You know, that space of understanding, generally speaking, I see it's clear to me that that is A, truthful, and B, it leaves a person less yanked around by his ups and downs, right? It leaves it in and of itself, it's truthful and it's clearly positioned to be more you know, present to the gifts of divine thought and less discouraged by the ups and downs.
Right. Right. I guess usually we think that, I guess, putting the, instead of praying for success, sometimes, but it's praying that Hashem gives us determination, which, you know,
yes.
Leaves, like, what, right, I hadn't thought of that.
Yes, absolutely. And you know, that is 100% the nature of what, you know, the essence of our prayer is to acknowledge that there's something missing in my life and to acknowledge that the source of that which is missing can only come from one address, can only come from the Almighty. Right? Now, that's powerful, right? Like, in other words, going back to the, you know, the story of Egypt, you know, to the extent that the Jew, you know, when we experience in general a frustration, a difficulty, a setback, we have a choice in that moment. We have a choice to locate the difficulty or the struggle in something or circumstance. You know, my parents, the way they raised me, or my spouse, or my, you know, whatever it is, right? Or we have the power to acknowledge, okay, this is part of a divine flow that I see and feel what I see and feel in this moment. I'm not saying I didn't have a past. I'm not saying that there aren't people in my life that might be difficult. But ultimately, I mean, my actual state of mind isn't owing to them. That's a choice that we're always going to have. And now let's look at the two. You know, to the degree that I err on the side of, well, my difficulty is coming from this person, then I kind of just become locked in a battle or a struggle with that person. And that's not a good news, because generally speaking, in my experience, I don't have control over other people. And to the degree that I think my problem is a function of them or any other circumstance, then I'm now locked in a cycle. You know, I'm locked in a cycle of, I can't change this thing outside my control. But if I opt in the opposite direction, if I opt for the fact that, okay, I'm experiencing frustration or difficulty, and I trust that it's, you know, it's what's missing is understanding. What's missing is the divine energy that allows me to see the world from anew, in a new and different way. That's what's missing. Well, okay. Turn to the Almighty and say, look, Almighty, I don't have the power to generate new understanding, but you do, and I'm turning to you, which is in and of itself a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah of emunah. Prayer is an expression of emunah, and it allows me to actually be present to and make, you know, and fulfill the design of the universe. The whole universe was designed that there would be lacks in this world, in our lives, and that we would use that lack as a jumping point to acknowledge the presence of the Creator. That's a profound kind of closing the circuit, you know, on why God made us. And so, and there, okay, I don't know when and where and how the Almighty is going to, you know, fulfill my request, but I trust that that's kind of, you know, that puts me in a different place. That's me. How does that sound?
It sounds very good.
Oh,
it
good.
Takes to explain, a lot of times to explain it to somebody, they have to kind of go through it and see that, you know, that sometimes determination, like, it's there and it's not. And it's not necessary. It's not tied to the circumstance. Like,
yes.
You have to go through it and realize. But I see, right, the understanding, praying for the understanding is really, versus, like, keep on blaming yourself for not being able to accomplish this or that or this.
Yes. Yes, and if you listen to people who are discouraged, you will see that the underlying logic behind their feeling of discouragement is, this is the necessary key to my salvation is missing from my life. It's my life that is the key, my skill set, my knowledge, my whatever it is. There's something that I'm defective. My life is defective. My life is, and I can't get that thing fixed. That's the logic behind discouragement.
Yeah.
And it's quite human, you know, it's quite human to feel that way. You know, I just recorded a short message that I'm kind of playing with as a short video message to send out. And the question I'm addressing is, you know, why does your life suck? Right? Let's say a person feels that his job, his life, his home, his whatever, something sucks, right? Why does this thing suck? So there's two possible answers. One is because it really, you know, one answer is because it really sucks. The other answer is because you're mistaken about your job, your home, your life, right? Like, in other words, you don't, you're something you're not seeing. And the good news is that it's so human to be mistaken. You know, it's like the story that I've shared of the Midrash, when Adam and Chava were created Friday afternoon, and they made a big mistake, and then they felt this pain and shame, and then they, as they were experiencing this pain and shame, what did they see? That the sun was setting, that the sky was darkening, and the sun was disappearing below the horizon, and this was their first night on planet Earth. So you know what conclusion they came to when they saw the sun setting and the world becoming dark? Take a guess.
Oh, I mean, I know that the world was over.
Oh, yeah, okay, you've heard that before. Okay, so they thought the world was coming to an end, and they thought that they were the ones to have caused it. And they were in extraordinary pain. I mean, they just, you know, were literally in turmoil. And they begged Hashem to have mercy and forgive them and not destroy the world. Now, as they, you know, they spent the night doing that, and then lo and behold, the sun's, you know, the rays of light start coming over the horizon, and then the ball comes over the horizon, and they come to this conclusion, oh, this is the way of the world. And my take on that is, the simplest understanding is, it's the way of the world for the sun to become obscured and then reappear. On a deeper level, it's the way of the world for humans' perspective, for human beings' perspective to become obscured, and for them not to know that their perspective is obscured, and then build a whole life experience on that of suffering. And so, you know, when a person is encountering this, something sucks in my life. Well, there's two answers as to what to explain that. One is because it really, really sucks. The other is because you're mistaken, and that's great news. You know, it's such good news that you and I are prone to mistaken understanding without noticing that, because it allows us to be in sucky moods, you know, or difficult moods, and yet somehow stand in place and kind of weather the storm.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for the question.
Thank you.
Hi, Rabbi Harris.
Yeah.
Hi. I'm following the conversation, and it's great. It's so human that we just fall into patterns like this. I guess so. What you're saying is that it's just our ability, where we shine as humans, is acknowledging that either we have energy, which comes from Hashem, or we don't have energy, but it's not that Hashem's not with us, it's just that for whatever reason, he's just appearing in a way where we're lacking energy.
Yeah, I mean, I would say
call out for him or not.
It's all divine energy. It's just that it could be that the energy, divine energy that I'm experiencing that I can't see past is, you know, a constricted, you know, an energy that is constricted or insecure. You know what I'm saying? Like it is definitely the case that the Almighty exposes us to tests. You know, part of our job in this world is to encounter tests. And by my understanding, a test is an encounter it's an encounter with my own misunderstanding. You know, I'm bumping up against the level, the kind of the limits of my perspective. And, you know, there's new territory that I haven't yet perceived, and I don't know that I haven't perceived it. I can just sense there's something I'm not understanding. So, you know, that power, the power of a test is kind of where I acknowledge, okay, the Almighty is providing me a certain constricted consciousness, and now I'm faced with the choice. Do I locate my constricted consciousness in my spouse, child, job, or do I locate my constricted consciousness in him? That's the test, you know, that's the nature of the test. And it feels uncomfortable, it can hurt, but, you know, lo and behold, the Almighty is he's walking with us, he's exposing us to things, he's exposing us to constricted consciousness, just like the mommy who's giving birth, you know, he's the one providing those contractions.
Yeah, it's so funny how much I keep forgetting this in the moment. maybe I'm meant to use my free moments where I'm not in constricted consciousness to keep reminding myself with the hopes that in the moment I will remember. But I know with me, it's like, I think that's really like a definition of crazy. When you think that something other than your thinking is taking away your freedoms and you feel like so tight and constricted, and you're attributing it to someone else, which is basically what you just said. I know, like, when that happens, the only thing that I know without knowing, it's just, like, I know it's so deep, is that I shouldn't, like, open my mouth and say mean things. But in terms of, like, coming from a friend, and it's divine energy, like, I forget about that part. Where I should dive into Hashem, or I guess I know you mentioned like a story where, you know, this man just like sat down and he let his fear like come over him like a wave. Yeah, I wish I could do that, but in the moment it just doesn't like fit.
Look, it's funny because what we're describing is what we're basically describing is. The ability to be out of control and accept being out of control, you know? It's like you don't learn how to do that in the sense that you get a technique, you know? We're talking
right.
about the experience of feeling oneself out of control, meaning, you know, like, we're on the receiving end of a force that's not me, you know, it's not in my hands. We live in an illusion that the circumstances of our lives are kind of what's shaping us, and there's a certain benefit in living in that illusion, because to the degree that I live in that illusion, I feel a little bit like I have leverage. I feel a little bit like I have an understanding of what's going on. The reason I'm upset is because my neighbor, the reason I'm upset is because there's something comforting, potentially. There's something potentially comforting in the illusion that the circumstances of life are actually, you know, shaping my experience. Even if it's still a painful experience, there's still some comfort potentially available. And what we're doing is we're saying, well, that's not true. And you can acknowledge the nature of being out of control. You know, I loved something that, you know, Tzvi Werther shared a thought not long ago on a call that on a video that he taught about how, you know, the implications of the inside-out understanding is that you're free, you have psychological freedom. And what did he say? What did he mean by psychological freedom? He said psychological freedom means that you're free of the circumstances of your life, meaning as defining you, defining your psychological experience. That's psychological freedom. Now, the flip side of that, the natural implication of that, is that if you're free, if you're psychologically free from the circumstances of your life, then what is shaping the circumstance, your psychological experience? Well, that would be the divine. And you are, if you are completely unlinked to the circumstances, that would mean that you are wholly owned by the divine energy, you know, like you're wholly owned by it. It's a powerful kind of flip side, which is, of course, a Jewish idea. You know, we're not slaves to Egypt. We're not slaves to people. Oh, so then what are we? Well, we're slaves to the Almighty. The greatest, the greatest praise, you know, a title given to the greatest leader that the Jewish people ever had, Moshe Rabbeinu, was Eved Hashem. That was the servant slave. I don't know, slave is not such a dignified word, but the meaning of it, I think, is understood. The greatest praise of Moshe Rabbeinu was that he was an Eved Hashem, that he lived in the clay. Now, that's true for me and you. It's not less true for me and you that we are wholly owned by divine energy, wholly created and sustained at all times by the divine will. It happens to be that he lived with he looked there and looked there and looked there to the point where he was helped and helped and helped, and he saw that with greater and greater understanding through many tests. Through many tests, that was where and how he achieved his deeper and deeper understanding of his being wholly owned by divine energy. We're also wholly owned. Just we have a certain comfort in the illusion that, no, it's our spouse. No, it's, you know, this, that, or the other. And that's fine. I don't mean, God forbid, to denigrate that. It's part of our journey, you know. But good. But how beautiful is it, you know, how special is it that you can speak with such understanding? I mean, you know things. You know something that is profound. Do you live with it in a peaceful way? No, all times, no. But you know something that is precious, absolutely precious truth. And there's no way you could know that. There's no way you could know that and speak. I mean, it's a pleasure to listen to you describe it. It really is. I enjoy listening to your characterizing how that is working, and it resonates with me. There's no way you could know that unless you were experiencing a wisdom help, you know, like help from divine understanding, divine wisdom. You know, you see what you see as a result of divine blessing, as incomplete as it might be in your eyes.
Oh, thank you so much for saying that. The way I picture it is like, I picture like I'm in this like field of like green pastures, and I really have the freedom to frolic around. But when I get outside in, and I attribute, let's say, this one person makes me feel so like confined and congested. It's like that one person. It's like, I'm in this field where I thought I could frolic, and now I'm thinking that because of this person, I'm like confined into like one little cubit, and I can no longer frolic in the pasture. I can only stay on my one spot, and that's completely false. It's only my thinking that makes me think that I can only stand in this one little spot. I can really frolic in the entire pasture. It's just me thinking that this person has a hold on me that's confining me. And I really think that's like the definition of crazy. That's like it's just your thinking that you think that like you're.
Yes,
like,
and I would
once,
just
once you, yeah.
I would just add, I'm cutting you off. So that's not.
Yeah, sure. No, that's fine.
I would just add, and the fact that you know that doesn't give you any more leverage to change that.
Exactly. Exactly.
And it's truth.
Because
you know? It's the truth, and the truth will set you free. The truth is inherently valuable, and it will set you free. As David HaMelech said, Yismach Lev Mevakshei Hashem, the heart will rejoice of the one who seeks the Almighty, who seeks the truth of the Almighty. You seeking the truth about your feeling stuck as coming from the thought that you're having, the divine energy that you're experiencing, your willingness to seek that truth, you are the Yismach Lev. You are the one whose heart will rejoice.
That's so comforting to hear. It's so comforting because it's like, can be such a roller coaster of a journey of all this like crazy thinking that I get. And I've had too many experiences to know that when I say things in with the crazy thinking, I just totally regret it. And I'm like, oh my gosh, what a fool I made of myself. that's the one thing that stays with me, but yeah.
Well, you know, because what I'm hearing is, and I think this is, you know, so common for me too, is, you know, you're getting crazy thinking and then you're having, you know, some judgment about having the crazy thinking, you know?
Yeah.
The crazy thinking itself is not really the problem. It's the kind of, you know, frustration, resentment, or whatever, judgment of like, oh my gosh, here I go again having crazy thinking, you know?
Oh, wow. That's so nice. That's so refreshing to hear.
Well, guess what? You might not see that at all times. You might not, you know, you might not feel that. You might still feel judgment. What are you going to do?
Right.
It's
yeah.
Just deepening,
I mean,
it's just going deeper into an acceptance, you know, that's what I see. Going deeper into an acceptance of the only, you know, of Einod Milvado. And then the power that releases within our wisdom to, you know, it detangles us from the illusions. The more we go into that acceptance and that truth, we become detangled, and we become thereby free.
You know, it's funny because now that you're saying this, I realized how constricted my understanding of all of this was. Meaning, like, I just got so broadened because I was like judging myself in the wrong way. You know, you're saying, you know, it's fine to get the crazy thinking. It's just the way I'm judging myself. And it's funny because here it is. I think I have it, like, clearly down pat in my mind. Like, yeah, this person is just constricting me, and I really could run around and frolic, but I don't feel like that right now, and I don't know how to get out of it. And it's like my understanding of how I get out of it is so constricting. But now I feel like that's what I feel like. That's what I just realized, like, now, from where, if I could articulate it, I don't know, I'll try. It's like, it's okay. You don't have to know how to get out of it. You can just accept it. And I think in the time I was feeling so upset with myself, you know, why can't I get out of it? Why can't I do something? But that's like suffering. Why can't I just, well, I don't want to judge myself on that, but okay, so.
No, but
sometimes you can't get out of it. Sometimes
you're right.
That's just how it is. Yeah, that's just how it
Beautiful.
Is.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Why can't I get out of it is based on the premise of, well, I, you know, there's value in getting out of it. I could get out of it. Like, no, you know, there's no getting out of the rain in the sky. As hard as you might try, and it would be silly to try and, you know, stand there at the window and get rid of the rain.
Right.
You're allowed to have rainstorms, you know? That's what human beings do.
Yeah, that's it. I'm like speechless. That's exactly it.
Yeah.
Yeah, just basically just accepting it. You know, you could have the best muscles around and the best imagery, but really, it's kind of me just turning into a technique and expecting that it's going to work for me. And what am I really expecting out of it anyway? Like,
beautiful.
It's just
beautiful.
You know, it's just how it is.
Beautiful. You just encountered a taste of what's beyond the form. You know, you just glimpsed the impossibility of anything in this world, muscle metaphors. Anything. You just glimpsed the impossibility of anything of this world to cause something new in this world.
Sorry, you said the impossibility of something in this world to cause something new?
In this world, yeah, that's right. There's nothing in this world that can cause something new in this world. That's not where that's not where and how things get created.
Right.
And
we
don't possess that power. We don't own the formless power of life. It's not ours. It's reliably showing up in us. There's a loving and powerful being that is authoring all that power, that formless power, but we don't own it.
Wow, and this is like exactly idol worship, because it's like worshiping something tangible.
I see it. I see what you're saying. Like I said, it's a pleasure to listen to the understanding that you have.
Thank you so much for appreciating it. Thank you.
Baruch Hashem. Oh, this has been such a nice conversation.
Great. And I don't have anything to take away other than I know that I came up with some breakthrough during this conversation, and it just, I felt like so humbled and like, wow, like I was beating myself up in the wrong way, and you know, I'm never meant to beat myself up, but just kind of like accepting, like, that's just how it is, kind of with like in like such a light way, like,
yeah,
just a rainstorm.
Yeah. Yeah, that's beautiful. Absolutely beautiful.
Thank you. So it's the un-takeaway.
Right. There's a feeling. You know, you had a feeling that is pointing to a fresh, formless energy that you sensed, you know? And that feeling is a beautiful guide to this simple truth. There's no question that our feeling is a beautiful guide to this beautiful truth.
Yeah, it's really just once you get a whiff of it, then hopefully it instills some sort of faith that there's definitely more to constriction. When you're in your most constricted of constrictions, there's definitely more to what's going on in the surface.
Well, any parting thoughts on this wonderful morning that we've had together? Well, I think we should pause while we're ahead. It's almost the end of the hour, so I'm going to wish everybody a beautiful week in Shabbos, and we'll see you, God willing, or hear you, God willing, next Thursday, ready to roll.